Members, please indicate their presence by voting. Would the clerk please take the roll?
16 members present.
I do lack a quorum, and the clerk will leave the roll open. Today's chaplain is Susan King from the local spiritual assembly of Baha'is, Lemon Creek. Would you please rise for the invocation?
Oh my God, oh my God, verily these servants are turning to thee, supplicating thy kingdom of mercy. Verily they are attracted by thy holiness and set aglow with the fire of thy love, seeking confirmation from thy wondrous kingdom and hoping for attainment in thy heavenly realm. Verily, they long for the descent of thy bestowal, desiring illumination from the Sun of Reality. O Lord, make them radiant lamps, merciful signs, fruitful trees, and shining stars. May they come forth in thy service and be connected with thee by the bonds and ties of thy love, longing for the lights of thy favor. O Lord, make them signs of guidance, standards of thy immortal kingdom, waves of the sea of thy mercy, mirrors of the light of thy majesty. Verily, thou art the generous. Verily, thou art the merciful. Verily, thou art the precious, the beloved.
Mr. Sharp, would you lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We do have a quorum. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll move and ask unanimous consent that prayer be spread on the journal.
Mr. Zwacky, would you please vote? Thank you. Is there objection? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Would the clerk please certify as the corrections of the journal for the previous day?
As chief clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 78th and the 79th days.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the journal for the 78th and 79th days be approved as certified.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll announce that Representative Barnes is ill today and therefore excused.
Thank you. Are there guests to be introduced this morning? Mr. Finkelstein?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd hope you'd all join me in welcoming to our body one of my constituents. He's chairman of the Mountain View Community Council and the Anchorage Crime Commission. He's also one of the four people who is filed against me for the next election, Ed Young.
Mr. Kabina.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to welcome some students today that are here for Project Close Up that are from my district. If they'd stand up when I call their name, please. Brandy Christensen. Brandy's from Chenega Bay. Shannon Tolman. And Shannon's from Whittier. And Leah Bryant. And Leah's from Tititlet. Welcome them. And also, Mr. Speaker, I'd also like to introduce their teacher, George Wiemeyer, and he's also from Whittier. George.
Mr. Boyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery A, it gives me great pleasure to introduce to the group a man who, in his own words, is an all-around great guy. He's on the e-board of the Labor's Local 71 and a member of the Governor's Safety Council, a longtime friend of mine, Don Shannon.
Mr. Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have some students and the teacher visiting Juneau from the Yupik School District. Please rise as I read your name. Brad Fleener, the teacher. Jacob Peter. Andrew Quagley. Eddie Pasitnuk, Joyce Yvonne, Levi Lott, Letha Kamarak, Mara Lomak, Ruth Ivanoff, Roxanne Knows. Please help me welcome them.
Mr. Jacko.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to introduce, first of all, in Gallery A, an individual from Lake of Peninsula School District, a local pilot out in Port Alders, Alaska, a friend of mine, Dave Wilder. Mr. Speaker, I would also like to introduce some people who are here from ADAC today. And as you know, Mr. Speaker, during my term in office, I've tried to make the people from ADAC feel more like they're a part of Alaska, since that was a concern they voiced during my campaign, during my travels out to ADAC. They're so far out there that they sort of sometimes feel like they're almost in another country. I'd like to have you guys help me give a warm round of applause to Louise Mapp, the teacher from ADAC, Dana Conrad, Betsy Heiler, and Nolio Tulio from ADAC, Alaska.
I'll introduce in Gallery A a person who I've had the pleasure of working with over the last couple of years on some very interesting negotiations with the Soviet Union. Wayne Neal is the economic officer at the Soviet desk with the U.S. State Department, and I believe he's probably closely associated with the CIA as well. Wayne Neal. Other guests to be introduced this morning? Are there messages from the governor?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. Dear Representative Cotton, I have read the following resolution and I'm transmitting the engrossed and enrolled copies to the Lieutenant Governor's office for permanent filing. Sponsor substitute for Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 37, endorsing the change of the name of Anchor Point Avenue and Anchor Point to Milo Fritz Avenue, Legislative Resolve Number 69, and Senate Joint Resolution Number 77, establishing Alaska Archaeology Week as April 2nd through the 8th, 1990, Legislative Resolve Number 70. Signed sincerely, Steve Cooper, excuse me, Governor. I have no further messages from the Governor, Mr. Speaker.
Are there messages from the other House?
The Senate has approved the following citations, and they are transmitted for consideration, honoring IBM University Relations and honoring Ingeborg Inge Lorenzen. The Senate has concurred in the House amendments to Senate Concurrent Resolution 19, thus passing House Committee Substitute for Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 19, Hess, amended House, relating to alcohol and drug education programs. That's been sent to enrolling. And the Speaker, the Senate also passed and returned Committee Substitute for House Bill 311, Transportation, an act approving the issuance of revenue bonds for construction of a road from Portage to Whittier and of the Bradfield River Resource Road and providing for an effective date, and House Joint Resolution 93, relating to the seizure and forced sale of Alaska Commercial Fisheries Limited Entry Permits by the Internal Revenue Service, and these have also gone to enrolling. The Senate passed and transmitted for consideration Committee Substitute for Senate Concurrent Resolution 38, Finance, by the Finance Committee, establishing a task force on adolescent pregnancy and parenthood issues.
You refer to the Health, Education, Social Services, and Finance Committees.
Committee Substitute for Senate Concurrent Resolution 47, Transportation Amended, by the Transportation Committee, requesting the establishment of policies, procedures, and standards for the construction and maintenance of rural roads.
Transportation and Finance.
Committee Substitute for Senate Concurrent Resolution 49, Hess Amended, by the Hess Committee, supporting the passage of an initiative amending laws relating to the possession, use, and display of marijuana that makes possession of less than 8 ounces of marijuana a crime.
Judiciary Committee.
Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 366, Finance, by the Finance Committee, an act relating to the Dalton Highway and providing for an effective date.
Transportation and Finance.
Senate Bill 411, by Binkley, Jaroff, Porchot, Eliason, Pierce, Adams, Duncan, Frank, Rody, and Sturgiluski, an act relating to sale of alcoholic beverages by a package store licensee.
Health, Education, Social Services Committee.
Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 454, Resources, by the Resources Committee, an act relating to the use of state land.
Resources Committee.
I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Are there other communications?
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of standing committees.
The Judiciary Committee has considered House Joint Resolution 66, Appropriation Limit, recommends it be replaced with the Judiciary Committee substitute with a new title, and reports it back as follows with a fiscal note and a zero fiscal note. Report was signed by the co-chairs Gall and Grunberg. Having no recommendation, Gall, M. Davis, Ellis Martin, and Grunberg. House Joint Resolution Number 66 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Resources Committee has considered House Bill 38, Captive Bred Grouse Farming, and recommends as follows with a zero fiscal note. Report was signed by Davidson, co-chair, signing DuPass, Hudson, and Menard. Having no recommendation, Sharp, M. Davis, and Davidson. House Bill 38 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered House Bill 171, Job Training and Education Program, recommends it be replaced with the Hess Committee substitute with a new title, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Domley, chairman, concurring Grunberg, Boucher, Collins, Finkelstein, Boyer, and Domley. Lehman has no recommendation. House Bill 171 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Judiciary Committee has considered House Bill 204, Amendments to New Corporations Code, recommends it be replaced with the Judiciary Committee substitute with a new title and do pass, and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Gall and Grunberg, co-chairs, signing DuPass, Grunberg, Gall, Ellis, Martin, and Davidson. Miller has no recommendation. House Bill 204 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered sponsor substitute for House Bill 332, Good News Bay Critical Habitat Area, recommends it be replaced with the Finance Committee substitute with a new title and due pass. The report was signed by the co-chairs Hoffman and Larson, concurring Hoffman, Larson, Swackhammer, Brown, Kopanen, and Wallace. Having no recommendation, Barnes, Schultz, Phillips, and Rieger. House Bill 332 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 398, Adjustments of Prior Year Foundation Aid, recommends it be replaced with a Hess Committee substitute with a new title. It's reported back as follows with a zero note with analysis. The report was signed by the co-chairs Hoffman and Larson, concurring Larson, Swackhammer, Kopanen, Schultz, and Wallace. Having no recommendation, Hoffman, Brown, Barnes, Rieger, and Phillips. House Bill 398 has no further referral. The Judiciary Committee has considered House Bill 419, Crime Statistics Relating to Minors, recommends it be replaced with a Hess Committee substitute with the same title and due pass. The report was signed by the co-chairs Gall and Grunberg, concurring Gall, Grunberg, Ellis, Martin, Davidson, and M. Davis. House Bill 419 has no further referral. The Resources Committee has considered House Bill 436, Protection of Native Human Remains, and recommends it be replaced with the Resources Committee substitute with a new title, recommends it do pass, and attaches a fiscal note. The report was signed by Davidson, co-chair, signing do pass, Davidson, Navarre, Hudson, and Menard. Having no recommendation, M. Davis and Sharp. House Bill 436 has a referral to the Judiciary Committee. The State Affairs Committee has considered committee substitute for Senate Concurrent Resolution 43, State Affairs, Educational Program about Permanent Fund, and recommends it do pass. Report was signed by Boucher, chairman, signing do pass, Hanley, Menard, Finkelstein, and Boucher. Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 43 has no further referral. The Resources Committee has considered committee substitute for Senate Joint Resolution 80, Resources, Oil Spill Equipment Cash for Alaska, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Davidson, co-chair, concurring Davidson, Menard, Navarre, M. Davis, Sharp, and Hudson. Senate Joint Resolution Number 80 appears on today's calendar. The Finance Committee has considered committee substitute for Senate Bill 219, Finance, Birth Certificates Children's Trust Fund, and recommends it do pass and attaches a fiscal note. Report was signed by the co-chairs Larson and Hoffman, concurring Hoffman, Larson, Swackhammer, Kopanen, Ulmer, Phillips, Rieger, Wallace, and Schultz. Senate Bill 219 has no further referral. The Transportation Committee has considered Senate Bill 236, Revenue Bonds for Copper River Highway, and recommends it do pass. Report was signed by Grusendorf, chairman, citing do pass, Hudson, and Lehman. Grusendorf has no recommendation. Senate Bill 236 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Madam Clerk, what was the bill that had the recommended approval or referral to Finance? 436. This time, the Chair will give an additional referral to House Bill 436 to the Finance Committee.
Thank you.
Does the Clerk have special committee reports?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader?
Can we go back up to introduction, yes?
Without objection, under introductions, Mr. Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I noticed in Gallery A, a friend of mine from Anchorage, an attorney, Mike Schneider.
Mr. Donnelly?
Very brief, please.
The House will stand at ease. House, please come back to order. Representative Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Under introductions, Representative Boucher and I have a constituent in Gallery A. She's works in the County Department of the Department of Transportation in Anchorage, and she's here observing the legislative process for a couple of days, and I ask you to please help me join Barbara Griffin, welcome Barbara Griffin in Gallery A.
Mr. Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On the introduction of guests, in Gallery A, a young man who I believe is one of your constituents is with us today. He's down observing the political process. He's a very active participant in the process. Would you please help me welcome, and we'll have him stand at this time, Eugene Harnett in Gallery A.
Welcome. Other guests? We're back to the data calendar, Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent that House Bill 268 be moved to the bottom of the date calendar.
Is there objection? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, House Bill 268 will appear on the bottom of today's calendar. Would there... Okay, we got a little out of order there. Do we have introduction, first reading, and reference of, or introduction of citations and resolutions?
Citation honoring Mike Efter, Coach of the Year, by Representative Swackhammer and Navarre. Citation honoring Patsy Pawson Amat by Senator McLean and Senator Adams. Excuse me, Representative McLean and Senator Adams. We have no resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction, first reading, and reference of House bills.
House Bill 590 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor with the Governor's transmittal letter. An act making a special appropriation to the Department of Natural Resources for the purchase of the in-holdings of the Seldovia Native Association and the timber rights of the Timber Trading Company within the Kachemak Bay State Park and providing for an effective date.
Resources and finance.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Before I get preempted, I'd like to go back to introductions. And Gallery A is my wife, Martha, and my new son, Gus.
That kid got red hair.
He's got a red head, but I'm not sure it's the hair. Okay, back to the regular daily order of business here. Would the clerk read the next item on today's calendar?
House Bill 445 by Copen and Ellis, Ulmer, Larson, M. Davis, Collins, Sharp, Zawacki, Hanley, Phillips, Gall, Navarre, and Donnelly. An act relating to the student member of the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education. The Hess Committee has considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with the Hess Committee substitute with the same title and due pass, and attaches a zero fiscal note. Concurring, Ellis, Grunberg, Furness, C. Davis, and Boyer. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent that the Hess Committee substitute for House Bill 445 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Is there objection? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the Hess Committee substitute has been adopted in lieu of the original bill. Does the clerk have amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Hess Committee substitute for House Bill 445 be considered engrossed to advance third reading and placed on final passage.
Is there objection? Is there objection to the advancement motion? Hearing no objection, the bill's been advanced from second to third reading. Would the clerk read the bill for the third time?
Committee substitute for House Bill 445 Hess by the Hess Committee. An act relating to the student member of the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education.
Are you ready for the question? Question before the House is shall committee substitute for House Bill 445 Hess pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
37 yeas, no nays.
House Bill 445 has passed the House. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
House Bill 491 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor. An act creating a sentencing commission and providing for an effective date. The Judiciary Committee has considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with the Judiciary Committee substitute and do pass. Concurring, Gall, Ellis, Miller, Grunberg, and M. Davis. Martin has no recommendation. The Finance Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with the Judiciary Committee substitute and do pass and attaches a fiscal note. Concurring, Larson, Swackhammer, Copen, and Ulmer, Barnes, Schultz, and Wallace. Having no recommendation, Phillips and Rieger. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move to ask unanimous consent that the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill 491 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Is there objection? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the Judiciary Committee substitute has been adopted. Does the clerk have amendments?
Amendment number one by Ulmer, and it starts on page 2, line 27, and it has been placed on each member's desk.
Representative Ulmer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would move amendment number one.
There is objection. Representative Ulmer, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Finance Committee considered this amendment as a result of discussion by committee members that the purpose clause of the bill was really not very specific. This amendment was adopted by the Finance Committee, and we actually authorized a Finance CS. There was an error in the committee report that was reported back to the clerk, and an error in the material that was submitted to you all last evening. Attached to the memo, you will find the House Finance Committee minutes from March 22, 1990. On the second page of the minutes, you will find in the second paragraph, Ulmer moved that the committee adopt the revised purpose clause. There being no objection, it was so ordered. So the purpose clause, which is before you as amendment number one, was actually adopted unanimously by the Finance Committee. And it was simply an error on the part of committee staff in terms of it not being reported back as a Finance Committee substitute. I consulted with the staff in the Rules Committee, in the Finance Committee, and with Pam Cook to find out what was the easiest way of dealing with this problem. They suggested that there were really two alternatives, one to return the bill to the Finance Committee for a new Finance CS, and secondly to simply offer the amendment on the floor. So that being the easiest of the two alternatives, Mr. Speaker, I am offering to the body amendment number one, which as I stated was adopted by the Finance Committee and to which there was no objection from the administration. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is your objection maintained? Is your objection? There's objection. Mr. Gall, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We had considerable review of the bill in the Committee on Judiciary, and speaking for myself, I can support this amendment. It clarifies the basic purposes that the Commission is formed to carry out, to evaluate the effectiveness, both in terms of criminal justice and in terms of finance on our present, of our present sentencing structure. I had spoken to the sponsor of the amendment about possibly adding a reference to investigation of the effects on recidivism of various alternative sentencing structures, but I do think that's covered in here. It's a good purpose section, and I'd urge passage. Thank you.
Further discussion? Ready for the question? Question before the House. Shall amendment number one pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
36 yeas, 3 nays.
Amendment number one has been adopted. Does the clerk have additional amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Rieger?
Mr. Speaker, you have a brief at ease, please.
House will stand at ease. Order. Does the clerk have an additional amendment?
Number two by Rieger, and it's to page 2, lines 14 and 15, and it is being duplicated.
Yeah.
Mr. Rieger?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move amendment number two and ask unanimous consent.
There is objection, Mr. Rieger. While the amendment's being handed out, you could discuss it.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To speak to the amendment, this
This new commission that's being set up is subject to the sunset rules of a number of different commissions, and the effect of the amendment, or the intended effect, and I think it's properly drafted, would be to change the sunset on June 30, 1993 to a repealer in June 30, 1993. The sunset process is a cumbersome process. We're rarely able to sunset anything, and I think that having a firm deadline would help spur the commission to wrap up its work. And in fact, if in fact we want to reestablish the commission, we could pass a bill and give them another lease on life. But I think that 3 years would be a good period of time for the commission to do its work and give a report to the legislature. In addition to changing the sunset provision on page 4, lines 19 to 20 and 21, the amendment also deletes the requirement for staggered terms, because with a three-year life, the staggered term requirement is not as significant, and that would be on page 2, lines the sentence, which is on line 14 and 15. So the amendment's being duplicated, but that's the effect of the amendment.
Is there discussion on the amendment? We don't have the amendment, so the House will stand at ease until the amendment can get here. The House, please come back to order. Amendment number 2 is before you. Is there objection to amendment number 2? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, amendment number 2 has been adopted. Does the clerk have additional amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the committee substitute for House Bill 491, Judiciary Amended, be considered engrossed in advance of third reading and placed on final text.
Is there objection? Is there objection to the advancement motion? Hearing no objection, the bill has been advanced to second and third reading. Would the clerk please read the bill for the third time?
Committee substitute for House Bill 491, Judiciary Amended, by the Judiciary Committee, an act creating a sentencing commission and providing for an effective date.
Is there discussion?
Question.
Mr. Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On this bill here, we've had it in the Judiciary Committee, and I really wasn't excited at that time, and that's why I put a no rec at that particular moment. Then in reviewing it and seeing that it's been extended in its concept, I feel that basically is just duplicating what other agencies are already supposed to be doing and are doing. For instance, the Judicial Council gives us regular reports of what is happening under their specialty, and talking about sentences and the length of stay and different crimes, and evaluating judges and who gives sentences stronger or weaker than the other person. We also have the parole board reports that come in on a regular basis, and we have the public safety commission or department that gives us reports on prisoners and length of stay, and of course the Department of Correction does that also. And I just feel here you have another agency we're going to establish that is going to be the perfect commission to come up with the perfect solution to our prison incarceration problems. And I feel when they're done, if they ever get done, we're going to have some more reports on the shelves or in computers, and life is going to go on as it is. And I just think it's going to be a total waste of time. The people in the various departments who are going to be on this commission, their responsibilities are going to be stretched out again. And somehow, ever, we're going to see an increase in their budget, not just the $230,000 that's recommended here for the commission, but it's going to put further burdens on those particular departments to participate in this council, which I don't think is necessary. Thank you.
Mr. Gall.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'm not quite as idealistic as the previous speaker. I don't think that this commission is going to create something perfect. I don't think it's intended to, but it does recognize a pressing need in our state, and that is to have a criminal justice system and a correction system that works. Right now, as everybody knows, especially those of you who are tracking the budget or justice issues, we have just a fantastic prison overcrowding problem. And maybe the answer to that is to build more prisons. Maybe the answer to that is to revise our sentencing. Maybe the answer to that is some combination of ingredients, but I'm certainly not the person to tell you, Mr. Speaker, which is the right solution. The various departments that are represented on the commission, as well as the public members, have made it very clear that they need a vehicle. Maybe what they need is to be told by the legislature to get together and work this out. It is a bill that's very strongly supported, and it provides an alternative to making any radical changes in sentencing or trying to second guess what the impacts of those changes might be. The purpose of the commission is to study problems as they've existed in this state and in other states, to look at the solutions that have been effective in this state and in other states, to give broad consideration to diverse interest groups ranging from victims to prison administrative officials and so forth, and to try to come up with recommendations for us to consider that will allow us to work our way out of what's a very serious dilemma. The department representatives on the commission need not be those commissioners themselves. The designees will be adequate, and I'm convinced by the commissioners whom I've spoken to that they feel confident about selecting the best possible people to help work out some recommendations for us. Finally, the public members will be selected to represent both various geographic interests, concerns of local law enforcement and victims, as well as rehabilitation specialists. I think you could call it a conservative group. It's not going to be out there to advocate for anything wild or extraordinary or new, but to review once again the history of other states, the experiences that we can depend on for viable information in solving this problem, and then formulate collective recommendations, which, as all of us know, is frequently difficult for a variety of our administrative agencies to do unless we say, get together and do it. I think it's a good bill. It has strong support from the various agencies involved and citizen groups that have testified. I would urge passage and thank the body for your indulgence in allowing me to speak.
Mr. Greenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a technical matter. Since we have adopted Amendment Number 2, the bill itself has a 3-year life. And I've just stepped outside and talked with Dave Dierdorf, the reviser of statutes, as to whether this bill should be in Title 44 in the permanent code or put back in the temporary act. And he informed me that as a technical matter, it can be just simply, he'll just put it back in the temporary act. So that's for the information of the body.
Representative Hanley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Listening to the comments of the previous speakers and of the representative from Haines, I too recognize that we have a pressing need in the state and that our correctional institutions are overcrowded and we need more beds. Many of the people we're involving in creating this commission are certainly already on the scene, and I wonder if a more appropriate way of handling the problem would have been to pass a resolution and ask the people who are most closely involved to come back to this body with a recommendation. I have some real concerns about creating another commission, and I question if we couldn't have done it in a more simple method.
Ready for the question? Mr. Taylor?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, thank you. I'm concerned always when we create a new commission, but in my inquiries on this legislation, came to my attention that it's been over 10 years since we initiated the new criminal code, and that no one has really looked at the criminal code from the entirety of it. We have had agencies, of course, that report to us on how the code is affecting them, the Division of Corrections, the court system, public safety, and others, health and social services, report to us how this criminal code is affecting the way they do business. Though I am loath to create a new commission and to fund it and so on, and I think it is time that we had someone other than the agencies themselves give an overall view and study of the manner in which our sentencing statutes are affecting all of these different departments and the way we do business in the state. We all know we have a tremendous cost that we're incurring with our corrections department and our penal system, the numbers of people that we've had to employ over the last few years to staff Spring Creek, to build new facilities and so on, and that if this commission, which I hope will actively pursue its mission, maybe they could even report back to us within a year or so and give us some good ideas on how we might better tailor this system so that it will hopefully accomplish some of the same purposes and maybe at not such a high cost to either the individuals involved or to this state. So I think each of those things are good. I think it's good to probably review this now that it's been 10 years since we have had the complete revision of the criminal code. I think each of those things are salient parts, but I particularly appreciate now the amendment that will terminate this commission about 3 or 4 years out, in that we need not continue this process forever. It's probably like a census. It's probably something that we need to do about every 10 years to get ourselves a good overview of where we are and maybe where we're headed. So I'm going to support this legislation and hope that they will be able to come back to us with a good report and some good ideas. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Are you ready for the question? The question before the House is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 491, Judiciary, amended House, passed the House? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
31 yeas, 7 nays.
House Bill 491 has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on final passage be considered the roll call vote on the effective date clause.
Is there objection? Objection to the effective date clause. Hearing no objection, the effective date clause has been adopted. Clerk, read the next item on today's calendar. Representative, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent that we remove from the table committee substitute the motion for rescinding action on the effective date for committee substitute for Senate Bill 343, State Affairs Amended House.
The motion is to the information of the body. The minority leader made a motion last week to rescind our action and failing to adopt the effective date. The motion was tabled. Now this motion is to bring that motion back before this body off the table. Ready for the question, Mr. Martin?
Mr. Speaker, I think it's popular to read the title. We've just used the numbers so far.
The motion before the House is to bring back on the table the rescinding motion for House Bill 343, is that correct?
Senate
Bill 343. Mr. Martin has requested that the clerk read the title. Would the clerk please read the title?
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 343, State Affairs Amended House by the State Affairs Committee, an act relating to the Retirement Incentive Program and providing for an effective date.
The motion before the House is whether or not to bring this before the body. Representative Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May we please have a very brief at ease?
The House will stand at ease. The House, please come back to order. Mr. Jacko.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to ask if we can move back up the calendar in the direction of guests.
Is your objection? Hearing none. Mr. Jacko, under introductions.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to introduce several people here on the close-up program today, and these people are from one of the more exotic islands in the state of Alaska. They're from the island that's home to some unique birds that you can't find anyplace else in the world, an island which is habitat to a very large portion of the world's population of seals, and an island whose people who have had a very interesting history. As most of you know, I'd like to introduce Victor Melavidoff and Melody Mandragon from St. Paul.
Mr. Menard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Under introductions of guests, Representative Larson and I have several guests in Gallery A. down with the Matsu Education Association, we have Ray Jensen from Wasilla, Mary Jo Parks from Wasilla, and she's president of the MSEA, Joe Gerard from Palmer, and John Sear from Wasilla. Please help me welcome them.
Mr. Davis, oh, excuse me, Mr. Menard.
And also in the Gallery A, Representative Larson and I have a couple of attorneys. One's from our area and one is not. Please help me welcome Mr. Dick Heron and Mr. Mike Snyder.
Mr. Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd ask the my colleagues to help me welcome the Education Support Person of the Year, a friend and good supporter of mine back in Kodiak, Bruce Garrett.
Other guests? That brings us back to the motion that's before us. Are you ready for the question? Mr. Martin?
Yes, sir. Mr. Baker, on the effective date, I think it's very clear to emphasize.
The motion before us is to bring on the table, take it off the table. Motion for the House is shall the motion to rescind our action and failing to adopt the effective date on Senate Bill 343 be removed from the table. Members may proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
29 yeas, 10 nays.
The motion's back on the table, and the motion before the House now is, shall we rescind our action in failing to adopt the effective date on Senate Bill 343? So, discussion on that motion. Mr. Martin.
Yes, sir. Mr. Speaker, on the rescinding action, I'd like to recommend that we do not rescind our action because I'm afraid it's going to be very costly to the budget, and if you did not like the concept in the first place, by approving of the effective date, you have automatically approved the bill. And this is one of those cases where the effective date either supports the bill or kills the bill. And I'm asking that we do not rescind our action. Thank you.
Mr. Boyer?
Point of clarification, Mr. Speaker. The effective date will, if it fails, not kill the bill. That's not the effect. All it does is delay the effective date until sometime near the end of June. So it does not kill the bill.
Mr. Taylor?
Just as a matter of procedure, it would seem to me that a vote today, or a failure on the part of the body today, is probably a better way to put it, to approve the effective date, which is the substance of the motion before us. The bill has already passed this House and has merely been held for purposes of achieving this one last additional vote or something. So as a consequence, even failing this, the bill would, because of amendments, would then go back to the Senate where they would have to, the other body, forgive me, where they would have to concur or fail to concur. A failure to concur would then result in a conference committee. There would still be a second opportunity because the effective date vote would then once more be before this House after the conference committee returned its report. I believe it still takes two votes within this body upon the return of the conference committee report. So I don't think this is probably the last vote we see on this one, but at this point, I think it's probably incumbent upon us to oppose the effective date in light of the testimony given on this floor by the chairman of the Finance Committee. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Was that a parliamentary inquiry? Are you ready for the question? Question for the House is, shall the House rescind its action in failing to adopt the effective date on Mr. Hoffman, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have some questions. When I was being briefed on the legislation, there was a point made that there was a window of opportunity and we needed to pass this legislation by a specific date. And I'm uncertain as to how the effective date, the delay of the effective date, has on the bill, and I wonder if someone could explain that to me.
Mr. Boyer?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In fact, the bill closes the window, and the window is effectively closed for all state employees with the exception of voter personnel who may qualify for the window effective March 31st of this year, so it's just a very few days from now. failing to adopt the effective date will still close the window. What it will effectively do, though, is keep those people who may otherwise qualify prior to the effective or the March 31st deadline from actually retiring until the bill becomes effective under the 90-day signature opportunity that's available to the governor. So all that would happen is that people that would perhaps retire in April or May or early June would have to wait until perhaps whatever the 90 days is, near approaching the 1st of July before they could actually retire. That's the only effect of not adopting the effective date.
Representative Ulmer.
Just thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just to follow up on that, the changing of the period of time in which that individual can qualify for retirement may also require some resubmittal of paperwork to recalculate. And so there is actually a paper problem associated with not having an immediate effective date, too, which will result in some degree of inconvenience and, I would argue, some degree of cost to the state of Alaska in terms of processing those applications based on a different period of retirement. So it's a little unclear exactly what the cost will be. It certainly does not have the effect of killing the bill, as was previously indicated. It simply delays when those individuals may retire, and it probably increases a paperwork burden to not only the individuals but the state as well, and I would urge members to vote for the effective date.
You got to remember that the motion is to rescind our action and failing to adopt, so I'd appreciate it if people could address that motion.
Yes. Mr. Speaker, in failing and to request that the people not rescind their action because of the effective date, there is a 5-year increase in evaluation rather than 3 years, and so everyone's going to have to redo the paperwork anyway. And when we fail to, if we support the previous action, not rescinding the date, then I won't waste your time explaining the difference. If we go back into reconsideration of the date, then I might spend about 5 minutes explaining the reason why it's going to be more costly to the state. Thank you.
Question for the House. Shall the House rescind its action? Failing to adopt the effective date on Senate Bill 343. This motion requires 27 votes. Members may proceed to vote. Will the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
27 yeas, 12 nays.
Motion passes. The motion that will be before us now is the effective date clause. Are you ready for the question, Mr. Martin?
Mr. Speaker, on the effective date clause, I think that we should not support it. The reason being is that it will cause an awful lot of people to redo their paperwork, not on a 3-year evaluation, as if the state would save money, but to redo it on a 5-year evaluation. For these people who are already going to retire, wonderful. I still think it's going to be very costly to the state. To allow them to increase the numbers by about another 900 people, because you're going to have a 5-year evaluation, and with the pay raises coming on, and with the meritorious credit that everyone's going to get, sure, I think probably half the state, at least anyone that's over the 40,000 bracket in salaries, going to benefit by the early retirement. And it's extremely costly to the state. We don't know all the costs. We're just finding out now that we're going to have to add $22 million just for the retirement programs to take advantage of those reinforce the actuality of our retirement program. With the new surge of people by the thousand hopping on the bandwagon, the state's going to gain nothing, the people are going to gain nothing, but those retire are going to have a happy program. Thank you.
Representative Ulmer.
Mr. Speaker, I reluctantly call in at these.
House of Standardese. Would the House please come back to order?
Probably had an inkling.
all satisfied. Mr. Gall?
Thank you, sir. Before we go back into this pleasant debate, could I back up the calendar for a moment to introduction of guests?
Without objection, Mr. Gall.
Thank you. I noticed a friend in the gallery who's also a friend to many of you. I'd like to introduce him from him. Mr. Leo Land in Gallery A.
Hey, Leo. You ready for the question? Question for the House is, shall the effective date clause on Senate Bill 343 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Mr. Hoffman? Mr. Hoffman changes from no to yes. Is any other members? Clerk, please take the roll.
27 yeas, 12 nays.
Effective date clause has been adopted. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar. The call is lifted.
House Joint Resolution 82 by Ellis, Finkelstein, Brown, Menard, Kopanen, Ulmer, Hanley, and McLean, supporting a police corps program. The Hess Committee has considered the resolution, recommends it do pass, and attaches a zero fiscal note. Concurring, Ellis C. Davis, Jackal Boyer, and Furness. Gall has no recommendation. The State Affairs Committee has considered the resolution and recommends it do pass. Concurring, Hanley, Finkelstein, Zawacki, McLean, and Boucher. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Moving to ask unanimous consent that House Joint Resolution 82 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Is there objection to the advancement motion? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the resolution has been advanced from second to third reading. Would the clerk please read the resolution for the third time?
House Joint Resolution 82 by Ellis, Finkelstein, Brown et al., supporting a police corps program.
Are you ready for the question? Mr. Taylor?
Yes, I had some concern, or at least question, that maybe the prime sponsor could answer for me. I noted in here that there was a four-year repayment sort of clause in here. In other words, if you want to go off and become a police officer, you can do so, but you got to come back to the state for 4 years. And I thought maybe he might be willing to characterize the distinctive difference between the employment under this bill and employment under some other bills we've talked about. I don't want us sending dual messages out here, that if you're a doctor, you get to go and don't pay, but if you want to become a cop, you got to come back. If that's at least what it looks like to me, maybe that could be explained.
Further discussion? Are you ready for the question? Question for the House is, shall House Joint Resolution number 82 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk, lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
37 yeas, no nays.
HJR 82 passed the House. Would the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
Committee substitute for Senate Joint Resolution 80 Resources by the Resources Committee, urging the American Petroleum Institute to locate a regional oil spill equipment cache in the state of Alaska. The Resources Committee has considered the resolution and recommends it do pass. Concurring, Davidson, Menard, Navarre, M. Davis, Sharp, and Hudson. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Moving to ask unanimous consent that Committee substitute for Senate Joint Resolution 80 resources be considered and goes to advance third reading and placed on final passage.
Is there objection to the advancement motion? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the resolution has been advanced for second and third reading. Would the clerk please read the resolution for the third time?
Committee substitute for Senate Joint Resolution 80 resources by the Resources Committee, urging the American Petroleum Institute to locate a regional oil spill equipment cache in the state of Alaska.
Mr. Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd just like to stand and urge the unanimous support for this resolution. I think it's very timely. It's very important. We found that as a result of the grounding of the Exxon Valdez, that there was precious little spill equipment located in Alaska. There's consideration for five spill response caches around the, literally around the world, and Alaska is not currently in their plans. And I think this resolution tells the American Petroleum Institute that Alaska delivers 25% of the oil to the nation and is really probably going to be the future of America's major oil activity. And putting their equipment up in here not only has a good benefit for potential spills that might occur in Alaska, but could also take care of anywhere else in this northern hemisphere. So I just ask everyone to vote for this bill.
Further discussion? You ready for the question? Question for the House. Shall committee substitute for Senate Joint Resolution Number 80 resources pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Any member failed to vote? Clerk will lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
38 yeas, no nays.
SJR 80 has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There are five citations on today's calendar. Honoring Frank Monzi, Citizen of the Year. Honoring League of Women Voters of the United States 70th Anniversary. Honoring Colonel Raymond LaVon Cox. In Memoriam John William Smith. In Memoriam B.H. Casey Moran. I'll move and ask unanimous consent citation to be approved.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the citations on today's calendar have been approved. The clerk will read the next item on today's calendar.
House Bill 268 by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to the Commission on Judicial Conduct. The State Affairs Committee has considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with a State Affairs Committee substitute with the same title and due pass, and attaches a zero fiscal note. Concurring, Donnelly, Menard, and Boucher. Signing do not pass, Hanley. Finkelstein signed no recommendation. The Judiciary Committee has considered the bill and recommends that the Judiciary Committee substitute with a new title do pass. Concurring, Gall, Grunberg, M. Davis, and Ellis. Signing no recommendation, Martin and Miller. I have two committee substitutes on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill 268 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
There is objection. Mr. Donnelly.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the committee substitute from the House State Affairs Committee, I feel, offers greater public access and establishes better safeguards in regulating our judicial process. This year and last year, the House State Affairs Committee held five hearings on this bill and carefully considered all the options. The committee substitute before you was unanimously agreed upon by a subcommittee and subsequently adopted by the State Affairs Committee. Now, with the exception of the Supreme Court issues that were added by the Judiciary Committee, the changes in the Judiciary Committee substitute do not stem from any particular expertise of the Judiciary Committee, but in my opinion are just a difference in viewpoint towards public policy. The State Affairs version opens up the process more to the public and affords a better accountability to our entire judicial system. And Mr. Speaker, I realize this bill was sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, and the committee certainly had the option to return it to its original form when it returned to that committee. But bills are referred to different committees for a good reason, and the State Affairs Committee felt that the changes were necessary and carefully considered the issues before adopting the State Affairs CS. Now, with that, Mr. Speaker, there are elements of the Judiciary Committee version that I think are very commendable, and they did good work on the Supreme Court language, and so that I will withdraw my objection in favor of the two amendments that I will be sponsoring and moving subsequently. Thank you.
Is there further objection to the adoption of the Judiciary Committee substitute? Is there objection? There is objection. Okay, question before the House is, shall the Judiciary Committee substitute be adopted in lieu of the original bill? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Will the clerk lock the roll? Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
29 yeas, 10 nays.
Judiciary Committee substitute has been adopted in lieu of the original bill. The clerk, please read the First Amendment.
Amendment number 1 by Donnelly, and it starts on page 4, lines 2 through 17, and it should be on each member's desk.
Mr. Donnelly.
Mr. Speaker, I'd move amendment number 1 and ask unanimous consent.
There's objection. Mr. Donnelly, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The amendment number 1 brings the bill back to the form that was adopted in the State Affairs Committee. To try to sum up the differences in this particular area, Mr. Speaker, the State Affairs Committee adopted a presumption that complaints going to the Judicial Council, the Commission, would be open and that the Commission would have to take a vote if they wanted them to be private and conceal them from the public. The judiciary version says that all the complaints are closed until formal charges are brought against in a particular case. The state affairs version, Mr. Speaker, allows the commission to have a vote. In other words, before anything would go public. In other words, what we've got is a complaint is filed. It's confidential until, under the state affairs version, that complaint would be confidential until the commission's had the opportunity to meet. Now, at that meeting, if the commission fails to vote to make it confidential, and all it takes is a majority vote, and under the quorum rules that I understand it, that could be as few as 3 of these commissioners out of 9 want to keep it confidential, then it would become confidential. And it would be open to the public after that point in time. The difference is the judiciary version says they have no option. That complaint remains confidential automatically. They don't have to make any decision about it, Mr. Speaker. It's automatically confidential until they decide whether or not they want to file formal charges. Now, there's 2 problems with that. Number 1, the presumption of confidentiality taints the whole system, I think, because it makes it much more difficult for anything to become public. It's very easy for them just to ignore it then. Even if they feel that it should be public, they just say, well, it's confidential, we don't have to worry about it. By simply requiring them to make an affirmative choice one way or the other, I think we're bringing a real important feature of openness to this process. Because now if they want it to remain confidential, they can do that. It only takes 3 out of 5, if that's the quorum, to do that. That's not so much to ask. That's not so difficult. But they're going to have to make a conscious choice that it should be confidential. And at this point in time, and under the judiciary version, they don't have to make any choices about that. And I think that's not good for the openness of the process. And so clearly, if it is in the best public interest to keep it confidential, they can still do so under this proposed amendment. But they have to make a decision about that. And I don't think that's too much to ask.
Mr. Taylor?
Yes, thank you. Just a question to the former speaker, the person offering the amendment. If he could tell the body what percentage of not found complaints actually move through the Judicial Conduct Commission. They've got quite a lengthy history of actively pursuing these things, and I assume that was part of the testimony, and I think the body will find it's a fairly high percentage. What happens, you end up with disgruntled litigants coming before the court, and they decide that the reason they lost their case is because the judge didn't like them, or that the judge once had dinner 4 years before with some friend of a friend who happened to be on the other side. And so they bring a complaint. Now, the amendment that's being offered to us says not only do they have to vote to keep this kind of mudslinging stuff confidential, but it furthermore appears to me to give a super vote to the public members. In that, in the line here near the middle of the underlined paragraph, it says, and at least one public member has to vote in favor of confidentiality. So if the three public members did not vote in favor of confidentiality, it would automatically be public. Allegations made against a judicial officer are serious in that this officer, like you and I, runs for re-election. He does it in a retention election, or she does, every 4, 6, or 10 years. And people have misused this process, and I think if the question is answered, I think we'll find out that the attempt is made to misuse this process or abuse it quite frequently. And that there probably is some validity in having a confidential screening device of some nature to stand between that assault and yet at the same time screen out and determine those valid cases that need to be tried and need to be resolved, which I think you'll find if the question is answered, those cases are far away in the minority from the total number of grievances that are handled. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Donnelly.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yes, Mr. Speaker, the former speaker is correct. The majority of the cases do not go to a formal complaint. And I think he's also correct. There should be a screening device, and that, in fact, is still provided under this amendment. If the majority of a quorum of the commission decides to, they can clearly make these kind of frivolous charges confidential. That's no problem. It only takes 3 out of the 5 to establish the quorum and to make it confidential. It would take one member of the public to vote in favor of that. And there's a good reason for that too, Mr. Speaker. The composition of the commission is established by the Constitution. It's 3 judges, 3 lawyers, and 3 members of the public. I think the members of the public are severely outgunned here, Mr. Speaker. I think that they should have some credibility in this process. I think they should be allowed, and although there may not be no problem at all at this time, Mr. Speaker, I'm not saying there's any problem with the existing makeup of this commission, but in future days, it could be very easily seen that there could come a time where the public would perceive that the supermajority of lawyers on this commission could overrule the good senses of the few public members, the minority public members. And that's why I have proposed the amendment in this way, so that it would take at least one member of the public to say, yeah, you lawyers are right. This should be confidential. I don't think that's a real high burden to have to meet. And clearly, it just takes a majority of the quorum to establish that confidentiality. So I do agree with the former speaker. We do need a screening process, and this bill provides it, this amendment.
Mr. Gall. Oh.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to defer most of my remarks on this to the co-chair of Judiciary. I would like to correct the maker of the amendment in his allegation that the bill was returned to its original form. That is hardly the case, but the errors as we perceive them and as the Commission on Judicial Conduct perceived them and as the court system perceived them and as every witness before the committee perceived them, corrections needed to be made in the previous version, and those were made. I've got a question for the maker of the amendment. This is an exception to the confidentiality rules of the Commission on Judicial Conduct. I'd like to make it clear to members as they consider the bill, they might wish to note that in the changes that appear throughout the bill, this is a bill which opens up the proceedings of the council quite extensively by comparison to the way they are today. But one has to consider just where to draw the line. I give you an example, incidentally, of allegations and how they sometimes come about. We all received on our desk maybe about 3 or 4 weeks ago a very strange newsprint periodical that made some incredible allegations against all sorts of people in the judiciary and legislators and others. And I think that people who have to sit as judges need to have a little bit of protection from having every slanderous remark made public automatically. In that context, let me ask the maker of the amendment. This is an exception, a specific exception to the confidentiality rules governing meetings of the commission. It would state that until the commission meets first to consider an allegation and has an opportunity to vote on the question of confidentiality, the proceedings would be public. I read that as meaning that every allegation would be public, and then after it's been made public, the commission can then decide it's confidential. Well, I just don't think it makes any sense. I think the amendment is not correctly drafted, internally inconsistent, and not in the public interest.
Mr. Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like the members, if they would, to look in the Constitution. Article 4, Section 10 deals with this particular commission. And it's true that there are 9 people on the commission. It's true that 3 of them are judges. It's true that 3 of them are lawyers and 3 of them are members of the public. But the way they're appointed to the commission is absolutely unique. The public, of course, is appointed by the governor and subject to confirmation. The attorneys also are appointed by the governor and subject to confirmation by the legislature. This is not a typical situation where the bar appoints its own members and the judges appoint its own members and the public are appointed by the governor. The governor himself or herself appoints the lawyers and the legislature confirms. And the reason for this was, I believe, to strike a balance, that what we're dealing with here is an unusual situation. It involves any type of discipline on a judge. The judges are not only bound by the statutes in the Constitution, they're not only bound by the canons of ethics of the bar, but they're bound by the judicial canons of ethics. And the judicial canons of ethics impose extremely high and unusual standards on the members of the judiciary. For example, they can't, in many ways, associate in business matters with non-attorneys, can't participate in various types of financial arrangements, and from a political point of view, they can't even, though they stand for retention, and the retention is contested in the sense that it's a yes or no type situation, whether the judge should be retained, they can't campaign and defend themselves, can't speak out publicly, and they are constrained unless and until they've already been attacked. Now, judges generally are in high-profile situations in the sense that every case that goes to court as a result of being unable to be settled. Somebody won't settle it. And I'm not talking about the uncontested things where you have to get a judicial decree, a divorce, or something like that, but I'm talking about the contested matters. They involve the situations where our citizens are unable to resolve their own disputes, and they have to go through the judicial system to do that, to get a person to impose the will of society. Oftentimes, these are criminal cases, cases where somebody may have been murdered or raped or a family member assaulted. And we have people in jail for a long period of time who have nothing to do and no reason not to get the people who were involved. And practicing attorneys who've been around for a while, prosecuting attorneys who've been around for a while, defenders who've been around for a while, and the judges, most of us, and I include myself in this group, have had our lives threatened, and all sorts of things have happened. And it's the judges particularly are at a very real and physical risk. And that's one of the reasons, Mr. Speaker, if you go into the Superior Court, you'll see the way the benches are constructed. They are bulletproof, basically. Because these people are, you're not, and maybe that's something we ought to look at.
This is bulletproof.
Oh, it is. Okay. Well, that's good, and they have bailiffs there with guns to protect these people.
And the people are more likely than, and you all read about situations in divorce and stuff where disgruntled people have come and shot up everybody and killed everybody in the whole courthouse, the courtroom. It's far more common for these people to raise judicial complaints against the judges and bar complaints against the lawyers and complaints against everybody in sight. And most of these cases, Mr. Speaker, are groundless. The vast majority are groundless. And the judge cannot defend himself or herself. And what we would be faced with here if this amendment were adopted would be a situation where some disgruntled litigant, somebody who lost custody of their child, had to pay too much child support or too little child support, got sent away for life, something like that, could just, without any probable cause at all, make a charge against the judge, and a minority of the committee, maybe because they didn't like the judge. You could have lawyers who had appeared in front of a particular judge and didn't like the judge, could ask to have it opened up, basically ruining the judge's reputation. And all we're saying here, Mr. Speaker, in the bill, and you have to read this section in conjunction with another section, and the key language is in the other section, Mr. Speaker. And I'd ask you to take a look at page 3, lines 13 and 14. And that requires, before a hearing, that there be a standard of what's called probable cause, which means that the evidence against the judge, if unrebutted, would be sufficient to support the charge. It's the same kind of a standard that's used in binding somebody over from a grand jury. This is very similar, in a way, to a grand jury. And it's basically, it's professional death if the judge loses one of these things. They can be disbarred and basically run out of office. It's a very serious kind of thing. And all we're saying here is that there should be a finding of probable cause that the evidence, if unrebutted, would support the charge. And that's a term of art, and that's all we're saying. This is very similar to a grand jury proceeding, and the consequences are every bit as serious to the judge.
Mr. Martin.
Mr. Chairman, I'm afraid the individual just spoke to talk me into the amendment. If you have all those people who are against this judge with all those bad things that he said, maybe that judge deserves removing. We don't have the opportunity in this state to elect judges, and we do depend a lot on the council to evaluate them. And I think it's a good step forward to open up what a lot of people think is a closed situation. I think this is a very reasonable, good amendment that shows that government is opening up even for judges.
Mr. Taylor.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just to correct a couple points that were made by the former speaker, we often have a tendency, I think the public does, and maybe to some extent even members of this body, to confuse the Judicial Conduct Commission with another body called the Judicial Council. The Judicial Council does evaluations on sitting judges, and it also receives reports, and it surveys people, and it goes out to police officers and jurors and other folks to find out what was the actual performance of the judge like, and then they make a recommendation. In fact, they're mandated to make a recommendation to the public at the time that judge runs for office for his retention or her retention election. The Judicial Conduct Commission, which is a totally different body, not at all associated with the council, investigates complaints against judges and has this awesome power that the co-chair of judiciary just referred to. I've always thought it was somewhat bizarre, the manner in which we handle this whole problem, having sat on both sides of this street, in that we afford to the murderer tremendous amounts of rights and civil protections. The accused judge never even knows he's accused until after this body has met secretly and confidentially and then decided whether or not a scintilla of evidence is sufficient to show some probable cause. The real issue probably comes down to what is probable cause. There have been abuses of this system by members of this council. and I'm Judicial Conduct Commission, and I'm concerned about some of those. I believe politics rears its ugly head, so to speak, at times even in that process. And as a consequence, I'm concerned about some of their recent activities. I'm also concerned about the politics and the coincidental aspect of some of the things that they've done. I'm very concerned about this legislation because it's wonderful to open that door up. But are we also going to, at the same time, give the judge notification of the fact that he has a pending charge against him or a complaint lodged against him or her and the opportunity to appear before that board? I mean, if he sends somebody up for 20 years, they're sitting there mad at him in jail. They say, well, gee, I heard he was dating Susie What's-Her-Name, and she's a bad character, and that's not good judicial conduct, and he sends that in. And so then the board goes out Judicial Conduct Commission and looks around, and he doesn't know what kind of investigation they're doing. He doesn't even know anybody's written the letter. And all of a sudden, somebody makes a decision. And in fact, if the way this amendment's currently reading, if two of those public members are absent and can't for some reason, maybe they're on vacation or not available in the state to come together for the meeting, if two of those public members are absent, the only public member there has to vote for confidentiality or it's not kept confidential at all. And it just seems like we use a funny and a different standard when it comes to evaluating these people than when we evaluate criminals in this state. And that's why I think that this thing needs some serious consideration. We have two chairmen of two major committees on this floor right now debating the merits or demerits of what I think is probably a very significant shift or change in the manner in which we legislatively are investigating or looking into judicial conduct. To me, that alone causes problems, because at least in good faith, both of these people are coming at it from different perspectives totally on this issue. And I think before we jump on one side or the other side of that issue, I really believe this matter should have further work. And I'll await the outcome of the vote and then decide what I'll do. But right now, I think it's very confusing to most of us, and it certainly raises to me that there are strong differences of opinion and that maybe we ought to have further hearings and discussion on this before we launch into it. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Gall.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. I'll make just a quick stab at clarifying. I don't think the issues on there as written are that complicated. There were a number of hearings in both committees, and every opportunity was given by repeated announcements on this floor to ensure that those people who were concerned about the judiciary work had an opportunity to participate. Many did, and those who did were in support. I'd like to draw members' attention to page 4 of the bill, just for a moment, the Judiciary Committee substitute. And take a look at the section beginning line 13 down to line 17 and read it the way it reads today in current law. And what it says is that the charges filed against the judge are the only thing that ever becomes public. The commission can make a recommendation to the, this is constitutionally, there's some unconstitutional aspects in current law that I won't get into, but as far as what is legitimate for the Judicial Conduct Council to do, or commission, excuse me, to do, right now is to make the charges public after they've had a formal, after formal charges have been filed. What this bill does is it makes the decision public. That's the primary focus of the bill. Then that decision may be submitted to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court, under our Constitution, we don't have any power to give the Judicial Conduct Commission the power to punish a judge. What the Constitution allows that group to do is to make a recommendation to the Supreme Court, and then the Supreme Court can punish the judge. But the public has a right to know what that recommendation is, and that's what this bill accomplishes, and that's why the bill is important. Now, I'm personally the sort of person who doesn't trust power just because it's there. And so when this bill came before me, I was very I guess I'd say supportive of the idea of opening it up further. And then I had to listen to extended testimony over a long series of hearings, and that testimony was unanimous. And I'll repeat a couple of remarks of the co-chair of Judiciary. If you as a citizen get charged with a crime and you go through a grand jury process to protect you, to suggest that probable cause must be evidenced before you're actually, you know, indicted and brought to trial, that's to protect you as a citizen. A judge is, I believe, needs to be held to a higher standard. But because they are held to a higher standard, and as the co-chair of Judiciary stated, because they cannot defend themselves, they cannot take political action in the press or elsewhere, we need to make sure that when an allegation goes through a public process and when findings against them are going to be made public and so forth, that that process is handled in a responsible way. And I think a lot of examples have been raised on the floor of the profitability to certain interests of trying to destroy the credibility or the reputation of a particular justice. For that reason, we made additional changes to those found in the section I just referenced, and I would draw the members' attention for a moment to, just bear with me here. I'm looking for the line in the bill which indicates that once probable cause has been established, and that doesn't mean that there's been a trial or anything, it just means that taken as a whole, the evidence suggests that there is probable cause to hold a hearing. From that moment on, the situation becomes public. This was a compromise in a sense, but I think more than that, it was a recognition that even a judge deserves a certain amount of protection from slander. And the way the amendment is drafted, I believe that protection is removed, and then an effort is made to try to reinstate it by a vote of the commission. It just doesn't work. And the commission itself, very anxious to ensure, just as our own Public Offices Commission, if you've been listening to testimony on campaign financing, is very anxious to ensure that we, and in the case of the judges, they are held to the highest possible standard, pleaded with us to use this language, which would give them the power that they needed, while at the same time ensuring that irresponsible accusations would not be used against people who have no way to really defend themselves. So I feel pretty committed to myself as a person who believes in public process and a person who believes that public officials should be held to a high standard and a high scrutiny. And I truly believe that the Judiciary substitute, and I want to repeat again, 100% of the evidence before the committee supported the premise that this language is the most equitable, the most effective and enforceable and useful language. And again, I would urge the members to defeat the amendment and move forward with this bill, which opens up the process extensively.
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Donnelly.
Could we have a brief at ease?
House, please come back to order. Place a call in the House for the remainder of House Bill 268. Mr. Swackhammer. Stretching. Yeah, the House is standing at ease, and there is a call. So once you're in, you stay in. How about 12:15 if we aren't done? See if we can get finished here. I'll lift the call at this time and plead with members to stay in the chambers here until we've completed our business. We'll try to finish before 12:15. If not, it'd be the intention of the chair to break and come back maybe around 5 o'clock. But see how we do on the amendment, Mr. Donnelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Speaker. On the questions that have been posed, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak again, The issue of the sort of paraphrase, which I hate to do, but the idea that's being presented is there's no protections for the judge, for judges from unscrupulous people that want to use the system to their own advantage and submit frivolous charges. But clearly, once again, there is the protection provided by simply a majority of the quorum. One public member voting to make those things confidential would become confidential. The argument that this amendment removes that protection and reinstates it does not work. I don't believe that that's accurate. Clearly, it doesn't take that many people to make these things confidential. And so I don't think we've removed the safeguards necessary. But also what we haven't done is totally block the process of public openness in this process. And that's what, in my opinion, the existing proposal does. And I want to state right here, first of all, I support this bill. If my proposed amendments aren't passing, I still think this is a necessary piece of legislation. And the previous speakers are right. It's simply a matter of degree here. How much do you want to open this process up? And I would like to find a way to get around the problem that's been talked about quite a bit here, and that's probable cause. Well, my good friend and esteemed colleague from Spinard said, probable cause is a term of art. And I think that's exactly right. And like art, its meaning is in the eye of the beholder. It's not a term of absolute science. And because it's in the eye of the beholder, and because the majority of this commission are stacked against the public, I don't think it's too much to ask that you simply have some way out of that probable cause, term of art in the eye of beholder, vagueness that's rolled into the existing system. And that easy way out is to simply make these folks make a decision that if they really want it to be confidential, they can make it confidential. And that just doesn't seem like it's going to cause any serious problem in any case where there's really any merit at all to these problems, or if it's a specious or a frivolous thing, it's real easy to make it confidential. And I've been somewhat persuaded by the arguments of the minority leader, Mr. Speaker, when it comes to the problem of the public members having to vote if the quorum is down to just five folks, so it takes one, and there's only one public member there. And to that, I'd like to propose an amendment to the amendment, and I'll just state it here, and I can draft it in just a section, that, and since this bill document doesn't have a line, lines down the edges, it's going to take just a second, but it's all the way down at the bottom of the page, three lines from the bottom, or four lines from the bottom. After the word confidential, I would simply propose to delete, and at least one public member votes in favor of confidentiality. And that way we would get away from the problem the minority leaders spoke to. And I don't know, if you want that in writing, I can do it right now, Mr. Speaker.
The clerk needs to have that in writing, and if you have anything else to say about it, you could continue your debate. You could make the motion.
Okay, so I'll make the motion to do that and ask for unanimous consent.
Okay, the House please stand at ease just for a moment while Mr. Donnelly gets the amendment on the clerk's desk. Amendment number one is now before you. Is there further discussion? Are you ready for the question? Question for the House is, shall amendment number one, as amended, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. City member failed to vote. Clerk lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Mr. Sharp. Mr. Sharp changes from yes to no. Any other members? Clerk, please take the roll.
16 yeas, 22 nays.
Amendment number one has failed. Clerk, read amendment number two.
Amendment number